You're listening to LGRadio.online. Welcome to In the Benny Green Archives.
As we found out last week, there were at least three or four Tobiases who kept disguising themselves as each other. There is one other theatrical family which qualifies for dynastic definition, I think, and that is the Fields. They started out in life as the Scanfields in the person of Lewis Scanfield, a comedian singer who was born on New Year's Day 1867 and before the end of the century was famous as Lou Fields, the tall skinny half of Weber and Fields, the famous German dialect comics, whose sketches used to lay them in the aisles. I don't think they'd lay anybody in the aisles today except possibly the Outer Hebrides, but for those times Weber and Fields were the hottest thing on Broadway. Later, Fields started producing two things, shows and children. And it's one of the children in particular I wanted to peep at today. One of his sons was Herbert Fields, born in July 1897 and who died this month back in 1958. Herbert Fields will always be remembered as the librettist who produced books which were adequate excuses for the young Rodgers and Hart to air their songs. Now, when I say adequate, once again, we have to allow for changing fashions. For instance, the show Peggy Ann, which Richard Rodgers always seemed to think was a major breakthrough in American attitudes towards psychiatry, and was therefore very proud of the show, reads today like a punishment. This was the show where the heroine gets married in her underwear at a ceremony where the officiating minister, her own mother, reads from a telephone directory instead of the Bible. After this comes the honeymoon, where the bride wins Cuba in a sweepstake. And so it goes on, this wild concoction of Herbert Fields. But it's the old, old story, interminable moonshine mitigated by good songs.
When the noisy town lets its windows down, little slaves are free at night. Then we'll soon retreat from the busy street till the crowds are out of sight. There's a rendezvous for lovers where we two can play. Very near your door, in the city's core, but it seems a million miles away. Meet me underneath a little tree in the park. No one else around but you and me in the dark. Just 5 minutes from your doorstep, I'll wait for your step to come along.
Sarah Vaughan, A Tree in the Park from Peggy Ann, a 1926 show by Rodgers and Hart. Now, if Herbert Fields wrote the book, it was his old man Lou who produced it, and it looks as though the father-son relationship was vital in bringing the show to the stage at all. Back in 1910, old Lou had produced a show called Tilly's Nightmare, starring Murray Dresler, and the idea of Peggy Ann was really Tilly's nightmare brought up to date. But a much worse nightmare was about to swallow up Rodgers and Hart, a nightmare so ghastly that Herbert Fields could count himself lucky that he was out of it. Fields did 7 Rodgers and Hart shows, but not the one which followed Peggy Ann. While the team was struggling to finish Peggy Ann, Rodgers and Hart, but not Fields, received an invitation from Ziegfeld. In his sleeping pill of an autobiography, Rogers writes that to get a call from Ziggy was, quote, like Moses hearing the voice of God on Mount Sinai, unquote, which is a bit of a drunken simile when you come to think that Ziggy was of stern Lutheran stock. However, if Rogers' comparative religion sounds shaky, that's nothing compared to his lack of judgment in the face of Ziegfeld's flattery. All Ziegfeld wanted was for Rogers and Hart to write another show while they were working on Peggy Ann. After all, there were still a few weeks left to write this new score. What could Ziegfeld offer them? Well, Ziegfeld had a friend, the notorious Leonard Repogel, a millionaire whose only occupation was sailing around in his yacht, which was called, with some sense of judgment, the Wench. Now, Ziegfeld and Repogel had just come back from a European holiday, and on the boat sailing home, they had been much impressed with a fellow passenger called Belle Baker, a lady vaudeville singer of small stature up and down, much better stature back to front, and an enormous voice. Ziegfeld decided to ask Miss Baker to be in a show that Rogers and Hart were to write. What they then wrote was so bad that Belle Baker took matters in her own hands and finally managed to come up with something that might save the show. Now imagine this scene. While Rogers and Hart are watching the opening night of Peggy Ann, Belle Baker goes round to see a friend of hers and asks him if he can help out. This is the day before the show's due to open. The friend says he may be able to knock something out for her, and then he spent the rest of the night on the task. And it came out like this.
Never saw the sun shining so bright. Never saw things going so right. Noticing the days hurrying by. When you're in love, my, how they fly. Oh, blue skies smiling at me. Nothing but blue skies do I see. Blue birds singing a song. Nothing but blue birds all day long. I never saw the sun shining so bright. Never saw things going so right. Noticing the days are hurrying by. When you're in love, my, how they fly. Blue days, all of them gone. Nothing but blue skies from now on. I never saw the sun shining so bright. Never saw things going so right. Noticing the days are hurrying by. When you're in love, my, how they fly. Blue days, all of them gone. Nothing but blue.
Blue skies. And let us now try to picture the scene inside the heads of Rogers and Hart when that swaggering great song was introduced. Comes December the 27th, 1926, Rogers and Hart trot off to the first night of Peggy Ann and are well pleased with the reception. The following night, they establish a world record for musical comedy by attending their second first night in succession. Betsy opens December the 28th, 1926. There they sit. And as the show slowly sinks in the west, suddenly the leading lady starts singing somebody else's song. A song so much better than anything else in the score that nobody since has remembered anything else. Irving Berlin's Blue Skies was in, and nobody had breathed a word of it to Rogers and Hart. The morning of the show, Belle Baker had taken this new song to Ziegfeld, who immediately got the orchestrators working on it. At the opening, according to Belle Baker's son, Belle sang it with 28 encores. On the 29th, she forgot the words, and who should prompt her from the stalls but Irving Berlin? Miss Baker's son says, Dick and Larry didn't talk to my mother for 10 years. Well, we wonder how they got along with Irving Berlin during that time. Belle Baker, by all accounts, was not the easiest of leading ladies. I must have seen her myself once because I recall a 1944 movie called Atlantic City, and Miss Baker was apparently in it, but I recollect nothing. Meanwhile, Herbert Fields was well out of all this because Betsy, which ran 5 weeks, even with Blue Skies, was written by one David Friedman and our old friend Irving Caesar. But Peggy Ann ran over 300 performances, and Fields soon returned to the team. In 1927, Peggy Ann opened in London, and they all came over to take a look. And it was while Lou Fields was over here that Rogers gave him a novel to read. It's doubtful if Fields knew what a novel was, but he read it. And then he went back home and cabled Rogers he could see nothing in it, which was odd because the pages definitely had printing on them. Rogers and Hart went ahead with their new idea anyway. It seems that when it came to Mark Twain, old Lou Fields, the critic, lacked that certain something.
I laughed at sweethearts I met at schools, all indiscreet hearts seemed romantic fools. A house in Iceland was my heart's domain. I saw your eyes, now castles rise in Spain. I took one look at you, that's all I meant. And then my heart stood still. My feet could step and walk, my lips could move and talk, and yet my heart stood still. Though not a single word was spoken, I could tell you knew that unfelt clasp of hands told me so well you knew. I never lived at all until the thrill of that moment when
one of the loveliest declarations of love in the entire catalogue. A song that was written for the 1927 adaptation of Mark Twain's medieval polemic, which he called A Yankee in King Arthur's Court. The musical version was called A Connecticut Yankee. Incidentally, that song, My Heart Stood Still, is the centre of the most famous anecdote of the times concerning songwriters' phrase-making. The story goes that in a Paris taxi, Rogers and Hart and two young ladies were very nearly involved in a serious accident. Later, one of the girls defined her feelings in the crisis by saying, "My heart stood still." In his autobiography, Rogers said that he wrote the phrase down on a scrap of paper and later composed the melody for Hart to put words to. Well, it's a pretty story, but I think the honest response to it should be, as one of Ira Gershwin's heroines used to say, "It's all bananas." Why Rogers should have bothered to write the phrase down is a mystery. A few years ago, when I was writing A Life of P.G. Wodehouse, I was scouring some of the ancient lyrics of his early Broadway shows. Those shows with Rogers was always going out of his way to praise. And I was tickled to come across a song in the 1918 Kern show, Lady Lady, a song called You Found Me and I Found You. And in this song, there occurs the following verse. I got a soaking. Now, wasn't that provoking? One day when it began to rain. You simply make my heart stand still. Just think, I might have caught a chill. And so on. It's not an enormous point, but I think credit for these things ought to go where it's due. Actually, years later, Woodhouse improved on the phrase when he wrote about Bertie Wooster in a book called The Mating Season. Wooster says, my heart stood still. I clutched at the windscreen for support and what-watted. And then he says, my heart stood stiller. Well, coming back to that song, Oh Lady Lady, it's amazing how so many songwriters used to use rain as the excuse for a song, Woodhouse included.
The rain comes a pitter-patter, and I'd like to be safe in bed. Skies are weeping while the world is sleeping, trouble heaping on our head. It is best not to stay and chatter or to wait for a clearer sky. Helter skelter, I must run for shelter till the clouds roll by. To stay and chatter or to wait for a clearer sky. Helter skelter, I must run for shelter till the clouds roll by.
The hit song of Oh Boy, the 1917 Woodhouse, Guy Bolton, Jerome Kern collaboration that changed the face of the modern musical. The performers there were Joan Morris and Max Morath. When I said earlier that Belle Baker had her tougher moments, that was only comparatively speaking. She was an overripe marshmallow compared to Dora Goldberg. Dora died on March 19, 1928. She was only 48 years old, but she packed enough chaos into her life to keep most people going for a half that long. Known in the business as Nora Bays, she worked her way with relentless efficiency through five husbands, the second of which, Jack Norworth, was a useful performer and songwriter. They had one moment of great glory together when they wrote and performed a song in the Ziegfeld Follies of 1908.
Shine on, harvest moon, up in the sky. I've had no loving since January, February, June or July. Snow time, ain't no time to stay outdoors and spoon. So shine on harvest moon for me and my guy. Thank you. shine on, harvest moon up in the sky. Outdoors and spoon, so shine on, harvest moon, for me and my guy, for me and my guy. Shine on, harvest moon.
Shine on Harvest Moon, sung there by Rosemary Clooney with support from Nelson Riddle. And that was, of course, the title of the biopic that came out in 1944 with Anne Sheridan as a polite Nora Bays and Dennis Morgan as a well-washed and scrubbed Jack Norworth. The opposite end of the scale, by the way, is reached in the Garson Kanin novel of a few years back called Smash, which purports to be a novel about the making of a Broadway show based on Miss Bays' life. Well, apart from the fact that the novel reads to me as if Lou Fields wrote it, the picture of Miss Bays, which comes across, seems more like a picture of Dorian Gray. But in her earlier years, Nora Bays crossed the path of history at least once by employing George Gershwin as her piano player, and then driving him crazy with impossible demands. In September 1918, a Gershwin song was published called Some Wonderful Sort of Someone. Nora Bays heard this song and decided to put it into her new show, Ladies First, a farce about women in politics. And for the six-week tour leading up to the Broadway opening, she hired George to play the piano for her. But here is that antique song that George wrote and Nora Bays liked.
Some wonderful sort of someone, some morning, without warning, will happen along. And someday, some wonderful sort of someone will bring you joy and sing you one wonderful song. And when for you life takes on a new charm and all the future seems rosy, there in a cottage where everything is comfy and cozy, some wonderful little someone, the most wonderful little someone will come into your life and make it complete.
Some Wonderful Sort of Someone, music by George Gershwin, words by Shiloh Green. Now, Nora Bays gave George what is known as a hard time. She said his accompaniment interfered with her singing style. Now, Oscar Levant, on the other hand, who was taken to see the show when he was 12 years old, said that George's accompaniment was the best thing in it. For a while in Ladies First, there was another Gershwin song in the show. This time, the lyrics were by the mysterious Arthur Francis. You see, George had a brother called Arthur and a sister called Francis. He also had another brother called Ira, who was so shy that when he published words, he called himself after his brother and sister, Arthur Francis. This is the lyric that young Ira wrote to pass the time while he was working at his father's Turkish bath at Lenox Avenue. Nobody came for a bath, or even for a Turk, so Ira wrote this instead.
Near Barcelona, the peasant croons the old traditional Spanish tunes. The Neapolitan street song sighs. You think of Italian skies. Each nation has a creative vein originating a native strain, with folk songs plaintive and others gay in their own peculiar way. American folk songs, I feel, have a much stronger appeal.
folk song is a rag, a mental jag, a rhythmic tonic for the chronic blues. The critics called it a joke song, but now they've changed the tune and they like it so loud. For it's inoculated with a syncopated sort of meter, sweeter than a classic strain. Boy, you can't remain still and quiet, for it's a riot. The real American folk song is like a fountain of youth. You taste and it elates you and then invigorates you. The real American folk song, a massive strong song, is a right.
Ella Fitzgerald singing the real American folk song, of which Ira Gershwin later wrote that it was dropped from Ladies First after 8 weeks and earned him nothing. The song then disappeared until 1959, when it was finally published, at which Norman Granz plucked it from the flames and gave it to Ella to include in the Gershwin songbook. Before leaving the ambiguous figure of Nora Bayes, what about that number two husband, Jack Norwood? Did he ever write anything else as big as Shine on Harvest Moon? Well, as a matter of fact, he wrote something bigger, at least bigger in America. In fact, he wrote a song which became so popular that no less than Johnny Mercer was envious of it. I think I may have told before how Mercer once said to me, "I'd like to have written a big hit, a really big hit." And I was so dumbfounded that I asked him to give me an example of what he considered a really big one. And he answered without hesitation, "Well, something like..." And he then named a song that Jack Norwood once wrote with Albert von Tilzer, which went like this.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd.
Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack.
I don't care if I never get back. Oh, we'll root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. For it's one, two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Mr. Kelly loves baseball games.
Why, I know all the players, I know all the names. I was raised with a baseball bat.
Well, fancy that, fancy that. You know a man named DiMaggio?
Well, I know him so well that I call him Joe.
Oh, this is really great. Listen to the band.
Some peanuts.
I want some Cracker Jack.
We don't care if we never get back.
If we never get back,
we'll root, root, root for the whole.
I love their uniforms, and if they don't win, it's
a shame. For it's one, two, three strikes you're out at the old ball game.
Gene Kelly and Betty Garrett in Take Me Out to the Ball Game from the film of that name. As for the unknown person who wrote the patter for that recording, it has been said that later the studio donated money for him to be sent to school and educated properly. The film Take Me Out to the Ball Game was about baseball, but MGM, who made the picture, was so terrified that the British wouldn't understand that they called it Everybody's Cheering for local release. What nobody, either in Britain or America, could understand was how come the baseball club that Kelly plays for is administered by Esther Williams while treading water. However, Kelly's co-star was Frank Sinatra, and that meant they had to have some songs, which were written by Compton and Green and Roger Edens. I think Forgettable is the name for those songs. Now, I've had a note from Mr. Paul Sams of Thames Ditton, Surrey, who discusses the problem of recognising the unfamiliar verses to quite familiar songs. And he goes on to quote a verse from a Herman Hupfeld song, which certainly doesn't ring immediate bells. The verse is quoted in Mr. Sams' letter as follows. He says the people mentioned in the verse include Mrs. Smith, Mrs. Jones, Mr. Brown, Uncle Benny, and Rover. Well, Hupfeld wrote only three halfway remembered songs. One was As Time Goes By, and there certainly were no Uncle Bens and Rovers in that one. Then again, he once translated the maunderings of one of the Schubert brothers into a song which he called, appropriately enough, when you think of the condition of Schubert's brain, Play a Simple Melody. And there's no Uncle Bens and Rovers there either. Well, that leaves just one song, and sure enough, Bing Crosby supplies the answer to Mr. Sam's challenge.
Didn't we have a lovely evening? Our party was a great success. Oh, didn't Mrs. Smith look stunning? Did you notice Mrs. Jones's new dress? Now, what did Mr. Brown say to Uncle Benny? Well, I guess it was just one of those things. Brownie had a few too many. Sure was a hungry crowd. They didn't leave a scrap for Rover. We ought to feel real proud and mighty glad the darn thing's over.
No more company to feed. No more papers left to read. What's to do about it? Let's put out the lights and go to sleep. No more anything to drink. Leave those dishes in the sink. What's to do about it? Simply nighty night and go to sleep. You're waiting now for me to say I love you more and more and more, dear. You're looking younger every day. You never were so sweet before. No more money in the bank. No cute baby we can spank. What's to do about it? Let's put out the lights and go to sleep. You're waiting now for me to say I love you more and more and more, dear. You're looking younger every day. You never were so sweet before, dear. No more money in the bank. No cute baby we can spank. What's to do about it? Let's put out the lights and go to sleep.
Let's Put Out the Lights and Throw Out Uncle Ben and Go to Sleep, written by Herman Hupfeld. To close, a return to Herbert Fields, son of Lou Fields, brother of fellow librettist Joseph Fields, and brother again to the great lyricist Dorothy Fields. After doing 7 Rodgers and Hart shows, Herbert then wrote some with Cole Porter, including Dew Barry Was a Lady, from which the following song, usually assumed to have been written years later for High Society, was actually written. In the stage show, it was sung by Betty Grable and Charles Walters, and it included the couplet, "It's smooth, it's smart, it's Rodgers, it's Hart." In 1956, Porter revised the song, and suddenly it became famous.
I have heard among this clan, you are called a forgotten man.
Is that what they're saying?
Well, did you ever?
What a swell party this is.
And have you heard the story of a boy, a girl, unrequited love?
Sounds like pure soap opera.
I may cry.
Tune in tomorrow.
What a swell party this is. What frails, what frocks,
what broads,
what furs,
what rugs.
They're beautiful.
Why, I've never seen such gaiety.
Neither did I.
It's all just too exquis, really.
This French champagne.
Domestic.
So good for the rain.
That's what I was gonna say.
You know, you're a brilliant fellow.
Thank you.
Drink up, Jack. Please don't eat that glass, my friend. Have you heard about dear Blanche? Got run down by an avalanche.
No.
Don't worry, she's a game girl, you know. Got up and finished 4.
This kid's got guts.
Having a nice time?
Grab a line.
Have you heard that Mimsy Star?
Oh, what now?
She got pinched in the Astor Bar.
Sauced again, eh?
She was stoned.
Well, did you ever?
Never.
What a swell party this is.
It's great,
oh, it's great,
it's grand,
so grand,
it's wonderland.
La 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 la
la la la la la
la la
la la la la la la
la la
la la la la la la la la la.
We sing,
we sing,
so rare,
so rare,
like old Camembert, like Baba.
Don't dig that kind of crooning, chum. Have you heard it's in the stars? Next July we collide with Mars. Well, did you ever? What a swell party, a swell party, a swell again, elegant party this is.
Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra, Did You Ever, from Cole Porter's High Society, but originally from Cole Porter's Dew Barry Was a Lady. And that's it. See you same time next week.
I drink to your health.
Nah, let's drink to your wealth.
You're my bon ami.
Hey, that's French.
A liberty
fraternity.
Have you heard it's in the stars? Next July we collide with Mars. Well, did you ever? What a swell party. Swell party. Swell again, elegant party. This is.
You've been listening to In the Benny Green Archives here on lgradio.online. Please do visit the website to find out when the next episode is on, along with all our other shows. This is lgradio.online. Thanks for listening.